on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, we are live here with yet another episode of the Auto Bid. And today we are joined by a special guest. We have Stadium Zone Jeff Goodman, also the owner and one of the, one of me and Aaron's mentors, but, you know, he's over at Field of 68 doing it real big in the college basketball space, man. So long time coming, Jeff. Thanks for coming on with us today.
No, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it, and obviously appreciate all you guys do. You guys grind it, and you know what? You're only going to keep getting better and better and better, and I'm like I said, I'm honored to be on here.
Appreciate it, man. We're definitely, you know, honored to have you on as well, man. And today we're going to have a very candid conversation, man, quite frankly, because obviously, you know, I think something that's very important right now is you know, this whole social justice, Black Lives Matter movement, obviously. But and it's something that me and my brother have actually been talking about for a while, man, with our mentor, you know, Rick Gorn. And I'm sure you know our guy Rick, man. We have had plenty of conversations about just around HBCU basketball. And obviously, you know, me and Ace, you know, playing at Coppin State, having that experience of playing in the MEAC and in HBCU for our last year, you know, we have a unique perspective because we also played at Quinnipiac, you know, at a PWI. And, you know, we saw your conversations that you had with a lot of those, you know, HBC coaches the other day, man. And I really wanted to do a follow-up because I think it's really important, man, obviously, that we get, you know, obviously the coach's perspective, but also a player's perspective. You know, and, you know, for you being one of the most respected media guys in college basketball, man, I think that, you know, our viewers could really take a lot from his interview, man, and gain a lot of perspective, man. So I definitely, you know, want to just let everybody know, man, you know, we're definitely going to be talking about a lot of things today, man, but we're going to give you the real, you know, we're going to give you the real. No fluff on here. So first of all, man, I kind of wanted to ask you, man, obviously you guys were talking about on you guys on 468, basically pretty much how coaches kind of get stuck, you know, in these HBCU conferences. And for people who maybe didn't catch that, or could you just kind of give us like kind of a rundown of kind of what you guys talked about on that podcast, just for a little background, you know, for our viewers?
Yeah. I mean, we've been doing this every week. So I started this series probably about 2 months ago now. And it's really more of a platform for assistant coaches than anything else, because I felt like there was nothing out there. And we've hit in different topics. You know, we did name, image, likeness. We did just the one we just did was actually, it'll air here this week, was on overtime elite and the G League Ignite and how that impacts college basketball. We're going to do one on women coaching and men's basketball soon. So we're trying to hit on all the relevant topics that a lot of people either can't, won't talk about. Obviously, a big one is HBCUs. And I've felt this way forever. But I think what I learned in this pod, and we had a bunch of assistants in HBCUs right now. We had Sean Woods, who's a head coach at an HBCU right now. But I think, you know, I've always felt like I've tried to do my part. And then being on the pod, I realized, like, I haven't done my part. I haven't. Like, I haven't done enough. Like, I've tried to help here and there. And obviously, I know a lot of coaches in HBCUs. And I understand how hard it is to get out. But Sean Woods hit me with it right across the head. He was like, listen, it's on the media. Like, if the media doesn't help change the narrative, it's not going to change. And I get it, because we do lump, like, the MEAC and the SWAC together over here. Like, it's off to itself. It's almost like it's a completely separate part of college basketball. And right. I don't know why. I don't understand why that's the case. Because, again, when you look at the players, the talent, when you look at – and I haven't been to a ton of the schools, but I've talked to enough coaches – you know, some beautiful campuses, much better than some of the other low major or mid major schools around the country. You know, great coaches. We know that, right? So, like, why do we keep them separate? I don't know the answer to that. And I think what everybody's got to try to do is, you know, again, and I put it a little bit on some of the coaches too, and said, listen, we got 350 schools to cover. Like, I can't be on top of all of them. And frankly, like, listen, if my bosses want me to go to a game, if it's Duke or Carolina or two HBCUs playing against each other, we know what they're going to want me to go to. So I got to be smart about it too. Like, when I'm down for a Duke Carolina game, be able to go to an NC Central game. It's right there, right? Be able to do some of that stuff. So, you know, I've got to be smarter about how I do it as well. Like, it was easy to do with McCurr Maker last year, right? He was a top 25 kid, went to Howard. Kenny Blakely, super smart and understood the value. So he was great with media as well. But that's a rare case. We're not getting a lot of those types of players. But there are great stories within HBCUs. There are great, whether it's human interest, whether it's just, you know, a coach, whether it's the campus, whatever it is, you know, I think, again, I think it's something that Sean Woods hit me with, and I understood, like, yeah, I've done some stuff, but I haven't done nearly enough.
Yeah. You're on mute, Ace.
Now, you mentioned McCurr Maker just now, obviously, and that was, like you said, that was an easy one to cover for if you're a media perspective, but obviously, you're not going to get a five-star recruit every year if you're a MEAC school. I mean, first and foremost, you know, I mean, we talked a lot about this with our mentor, Rick. I mean, do you think it's even worth the MEAC schools recruiting these five-star guys? Because, like, you get a guy like McCurr Maker, he plays, what, 3-4 games, and then he doesn't play well, to be completely honest, and his stock starts to go down, and then they shut him down. And it's like, what's all that worth, you know, what the price of admission? You know what I'm saying? And is it worth – so, for example, me and Drew obviously played at Coppin last year, and so we're obviously now it's kind of trendy to – have a HBCU in your top five, and you know you list your whole, you know, your finalists, and you have an HBCU in there, and it's like
Mikey Williams is saying, yeah, he's gonna be recruited by HBCU allegedly.
Yeah, but it's like, are these kids really gonna go to HBCUs? So if you're a MEAC school, does it make sense for you to even go after these guys? You know, obviously right now it's trendy, but a lot of these kids simply aren't gonna go to HBCU. So I mean, in your opinion, is it even worth these guys recruiting these type of athletes?
What I'll say is, listen, McCurr Maker got a ton of attention when he committed. Yeah. And after that, it was like, nobody wrote about how he only played a few games, you know? And again, it was a different year, obviously, COVID, he got injured, whatever. So like, I feel like it was worth it because of the bang they got for him committing, right? Like, it was huge. Everybody reported on it. So I felt like in that case, it was, and I was shocked he ever ended up there, to be honest. Ed Smith lied to my face about Thon Maker. So I didn't think he'd ever end up there. I thought he'd end up going pro. So all the power to him, and I'm glad he went to Howard. I wish it had worked out better for the kid, because what I will say is, like, Thon Maker, one of the best kids I've ever met doing this. Like, unbelievable. And I've heard McCurr is similar. So, like, I just want that kid to be successful and hopefully take whatever path it's going to be able to make a lot of money like Thon and again, hopefully be successful. I think it's got to be the right situation for these kids, right? Like, I mean, if you're a HBCU school, like, coach, you're not going after a kid just because he's a – like, you know. You should understand, like, hey, my odds are slim here. Yeah, maybe I'll be in the top five, but how much time am I really going to devote to a kid that I'm probably not going to get? Like, it's got to be a rare case when they say, hey, I'm gonna fight the fight on this one and take it to the finish line. And I'm probably not going to win, but you know what? For Mikey Williams, if I'm in his top five, that's like winning. That's kind of like winning, right? If you Mikey Williams and his 3 million Instagram followers, you know, puts that out every day that I don't even know what his five is. But whatever it is, if you're fifth, you're like, hey, that's worth the price of admission right there. I don't have to get him. As long as we're in the mix, we're getting plenty of pub.
Right. Now, and I think it makes sense. I mean, I think for a program like, you know, let's talk about NC Central, for example, you know, with Lavelle Mullen, they've got the coach, they've got the NCAA tournament experience. You know, they've won 3 out of the last 4 MEAC championships. I think it might make sense for Mikey Williams to maybe give a school like that a look, you know. But, you know, speaking of Central, man, I want to talk about this because I think that, you know, Lavelle Mullen is one of the most underrated coaches, you know, based on his success that he had at North Carolina Central. I want to touch on this because you guys mentioned this in your podcast on 368. Why do you think it's been so hard for a guy like that to be able to move up, or, you know, Coach Jones at Norfolk, who's also been very, very successful? I mean, why do you think it's been so tough for guys like that to be able to move up and get jobs given the success that they've had?
The perception. It's all about perception. Again, getting back to it, and people not giving HBCUs the same level of respect and credibility that some of these other schools are getting. You know, it's not easy to get a job anyway. But then when you've got ADs that say to themselves, well, if I hire Lavelle Moten from NC Central, you know, in an HBCU, am I going to win the press conference? Like, a lot of ADs think that way. I got to win the press conference. No, you don't. You don't. The press conference lasts for one day. Like, you got to win games. You got to get the right coach that's going to win games. And Lavelle Moten has a ton of energy. He's obviously proven. Robert Jones has done an unbelievable job. Look at what they did this past year. You know, you got Will Jones, who's had a great first year at NCA&T. Some great coaches. And I do think it's funny. We have the search firms on the week before from Turnkey, Chad Chatlers and Katie Young. And Katie probably didn't phrase her answer to a question about HBCUs quite in the way that she wanted to. But, you know, I think what they were saying, what they were trying to get to was that there are a lot of coaches. First of all, most coaches have agents. Okay. Most coaches have agents. A lot of coaches in HBCUs don't have agents. And the agents are the ones that are wearing out the search firms. I think that's what they were trying to get at here. You know, and they were trying to say, like, hey, you guys got to be more active too. And again, like, the agents are the ones that are pounding away at the search firms more than anything. It's not always the coaches. So I think that's one area where, not just for HBCUs, but for a lot of low major, you know, assistant coaches or even head coaches, they might not have an agent to advocate for them, to go after these search firms and make sure that they're in the mix. But beyond that, I do think it's something where, again, it gets back to that same thing of credibility, of respect, that they just don't have that same level that some of the other really good mid-majors or even low majors have.
Yeah. Now, I want to touch on something that you talked about on the interview, and it was the SID issue, with how a lot of these SIDs, and you guys were a little harsh on the SIDs on the pod, saying, you know, a lot of SIDs, you know, you got these schools that have, you know, Norfolk State, for example, being fourth in wins in the state of Virginia over the last 10 years and having 33, I think it was, pros in the last 8 years and whatnot. But, you know, just kind of in the defense of some HBCUs, I think the bigger issue is that, so for example, when I was at Quinnipiac, right, each individual team had an SID. There was a men's basketball SID, women's basketball SID, a field hockey SID, and that SID was responsible for that individual team. I went to Coppin, and there was one SID for the whole athletic department. Literally, I went there, and I remember – so the reason we started All Facts Media at first was because at Quinnipiac, we had a student media program. I was a beat reporter there for – I mean, we had a news organization all campus. We had newspaper – whole nine yards. Like Coppin, so I went there like, yo, do you guys have anybody that's covering these athletes? Do you ever have anybody that's newspaper, or do you have anybody that's filming games and doing highlights? They were like, nah. I was like, all right, well, you know, do you have a camera? I mean, if you want, you know, I film highlights at Quinnipiac. I'll film games and make some highlights. Like, yo, we wouldn't even have a camera. Like, we have one camera sits above the basket that films the games that we use for our stream. But we don't have, like, a camera for our athletic department. And he's one dude trying to cover the whole – so you have, for example, in March, you have – men's basketball, women's basketball, indoor and outdoor track star, and you have baseball, you have softball. He's trying to cover all these sports at one time. So it's like, a lot of times there's not even enough people to cover these teams the correct way, and that comes from funding. You know, I comment, for example, they just got a grant to where he could hire, like, an intern to come and help him out. But it's like, these schools oftentimes don't even have the money to hire people to cover these teams. There's no newspaper. There's nobody that's giving these athletes coverage. Like, for example, at Coppin State, there's an Olympic runner on the track team, like Joseph Amoah. He literally is running in the Olympics, like, and nobody knows that, because, like, you're not getting that out there. So it's like, from one hand, it's like, all right, the SID have to do better, but at the same time, it's like, they need some help. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know
if they're spread too thin. Yeah, they're definitely spread too thin. I get it. What I would say to that is, like you just said, why can't you? We do Field of 68. We start, Doster and I started it up. And we got a bunch of interns. Why can't you find somebody at Coppin State? I guarantee there are kids on campus at Coppin State that would want to help out if they understood hey, listen, I could be the primary media contact and get some experience, you know, with the women's basketball team or the men's basketball team or the golf team or whatever. You don't think they want to do it? I get it, and I agree. I agree. Obviously, it's not the same as at a Big Ten school where you've got multiple people, not just one. You've got two or three or four people on the men's basketball beat, you know, covering for sports information director. But I still feel like there's still a way to try to get stories out there and help get, like you said, the Olympic runner. Like, that story should be out there. Like, that's an easy one. And to me, again, I get it. Like, I've said it to somebody recently, sports information directors, like at Quinnipiac, for instance, what I think they should have done with you guys, if I were a sports information director, you know what I would do in the preseason? I would take an hour with everybody on my team and have lunch for an hour. And I would have my notebook or recorder, and I would just talk to you about you. And you know what? I guarantee I would come out, well, with you guys, it'd be easy. You know, like the two of you guys, that'd be an easy story. Like, that's the easiest story ever to sell, right? But because you guys, not only the fact that you're twins, like your passion, what you're doing, all those things would have been an easy story to sell to anybody. But like everybody on everybody's got a unique story. Everybody. And the only way to find it out is to spend time with somebody and ask questions and listen. So I don't buy it completely. I understand they're spread thin. I get that part of it. But I feel like there's still ways around it. And even if the coaches are a part of that, right? Put an assistant coach. Who knows them better? Who knows these kids better than the assistant coaches? Who recruited that kid? Which coach? All right, I want to sit down with you for 10 minutes. What's his story? Does he have an unbelievable story? Even write it up. Send me notes. So maybe I don't have the time to sit down with a kid for an hour. But you know what, assistant coach? Give me one thing about each player that you recruited on that team that is unique to that player.
For sure. I think a lot of people also think that sort of like, you know, what you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast about like the MEAC and the SWAC, and I was kind of like over there. I don't think a lot of people realize like the talent level, you know, of the MEAC and the quality of players that are in the MEAC. I mean, just this year, I mean, Coppin State, you know, shout out to, you know, Juan Dixon and Coach Auslander, you guys, you know, Coach Charles, y'all doing a great job down there. But they had a guy in Anthony Tark who was the MEAC player of the year, MEAC defensive player of the year, was on the Lou Hanson mid-major player of the year watch list. I mean, he gave Duke 22 on the road the first game of the season, and he's a guy that's going to be potentially going to have some NBA workouts. He's going to have a chance and obviously maybe not get drafted, but sneak his way in there, summer league somehow. A couple of years ago, Morgan State, they had two guys. They had Taiwan Kinley and Phil Carr, who both signed training camp deals with the Wizards and the Knicks. I mean, if we can go on and on, but there's obviously Kylo Quinn got drafted out of Norfolk, you know, a couple of years ago. But, I mean, there's a lot of talent in the MEAC. You know, I think that a lot of people don't really give it a chance. And don't really understand, man, like that these teams have a lot of players. I mean, last year at Coppin, you know, we went on the road and beat Loyola Chicago, you know, and this year they're in a Sweet 16, that same exact team with, you know, Cameron Crutwig and Tate Hall and Lucas Williams and all those guys. So, I mean, I just want to, like, kind of speak to that a little bit, man. Like, I know you mentioned, you know, from a media perspective, you haven't really seen too many games, but what do you think we can do better to kind of promote these players and the things that are going on with these MEAC guys so that people around the country know that, like, yo, like, there are hoopers that are playing high-level basketball in the MEAC?
I mean, I think TV exposure is one of the things that hurts, no doubt, right? I mean, but, I don't think it just hurts the MEAC and the SWAC. I mean, you know, how many times do we, you know, you see a lot of America East games on TV? Not really, right? I mean, you got to find them. You got to go and find a lot of them. Now, there's probably more. You know, certainly like Vermont's going to get more play than NC Central. We know that. But I do think TV plays a part of it, and that's changing now. That's changing because you can get any game you want anywhere now. Like, you can find – if you want to find it, you can find it. The hardest part for anybody is, what are you doing – normally, what are you doing at night? You're going to flip on ESPN. You're going to flip on – Fox, you're going to flip on the main channels and see who's playing. And the teams that are obviously the Dukes, the Carolinas, the UCLAs, the, you know, whatever, those are the teams that are on TV. So I think that makes it harder for you to – you got to want to find a game. There's got to be a hook to it, right? There's got to be a hook to it. And I think the biggest problem is there's no hook. We're not putting the hook out there for the HBCUs. We're not doing it. It's on us. Who are the players? If we put it out there that, oh, my God, you have to watch Anthony Tarr. You have to watch him. He's that good. And I'm tweeting about it. And Dosser's tweeting about it. And Borzello's tweeting about it. And Norlander's tweeting about it. Then you know what? People are going to be like, oh, shit, I got to watch this kid. Right? So it is on us a lot because he can be a great player. But if he's not getting that media attention, I don't know how many people are really going to pay attention. Like they're going to, you know, it's like anything. It's like an AU event, right? Like you go to an AU event and somebody blows up at that AU event that maybe you did, like Jeff Adrian is a name years ago who did that. Okay. Like he blew up. He was Wright State was on him. And then all of a sudden at the Peach Jam, he blew up and it was like word of mouth, right? Everybody's talking about it there. You got to see this kid. I had already seen Jeff Adrian plenty. So I knew he was high major, but all of a sudden it started picking up and you have more and more coaches there and you have more and more media people there. And before you knew it, everybody was writing about Jeff Adrian. Well, it's the same thing here. We need some momentum. We need some momentum. And, you know, to take it to a different level, almost like USA basketball became cool when Kay took over. He got it to become cool USA basketball for kids to play in the Olympics. Yep. And part of it was like he partnered with like World Wide West. And World Wide West told LeBron, yeah, you should, you know, like he kind of helped. Like you just have to get some momentum with this to whereas people think, all right, not only is it cool to play HBCU, but like the level of talent is really good. Yes, it may not be consistently as good as the ACC or the Big Ten or those leagues. Obviously, overall, the depth of the talent is different. But any other league in America, you could put the HBCU, they're going to have high-end talent, period.
I think another part of it is that, you know, and Coach Brown talked about this on you guys' Zoom, is, you know, the ADs in a lot of these leagues won't even hire assistants within the league, you know? And it's like, I think that is a huge, huge issue because it's like if you're an AD at a Delaware State, for example, who had an opening this coaching cycle, how are you not calling, you know, Coach Brown from Norfolk or, you know, central assistant, you know, A&T assistant and trying to get one of those guys to come to a Dell State, you know? So it's like, I don't know, do you think that falls more on the ADs? Like, do you think that falls more on, like, because a lot of these ADs, they'll hire a search firm and they'll hide behind the search firm and work, well, you know, I guess for my question, how do we get past that? Like, is it an AD thing? Is it a you know, search firm thing? Like, you know, because obviously for our viewers, obviously, you know, some people might not know a lot of these coaches, a lot of these ADs will hire search firms, you know, to come and hire their guys so they can eventually get a bigger job. I mean, talk a little bit about that and how we can kind of remedy that issue as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you've got to get these ADs in front of the best people in the league so that they don't have a choice. It's like, hey, here are the guys we got. These guys are ready. Get them in front of them. Like the Delaware State hired a high school guy, I think, right? And they hire a high school coach?
Yep.
I mean, again, listen, all the power to him. He's probably a hell of a coach. But you can't reward an assistant in the league? You're telling me there's not a couple guys that are more than qualified to be able to do that job? So I just feel like, you know, that's part of the problem, absolutely, is the ADs and getting – and one of the things I'm going to try to do, probably do it next offseason, is start up something. I know there's like Top Connect. There's other things out there. And make it a little more inclusive of you know, HBCU assistants, all types of assistants, rather than, you know, even when we're doing this, when we're doing this assistant series, you know, certain topics are geared more for high major coach, like, you know, Overtime Elite and G League Ignite. Right, I'm not going to have a guy from an HBCU on there because, frankly, he's not dealing with that. That's really not an issue to him. It's more for high majors. But most of the other ones, if you notice, I'll try to have some high major guys, you know, a mid-major guy, a low-major guy. We had Kayson Burke from Jackson State on one earlier this year. So, you know, trying to mix it up as much as I can. And I think that's something that a lot of these Top Connect and some of these other programs that are built to connect ADs to top assistants need to be doing, frankly. They need to be more inclusive and more understanding of the fact that, like, the high major guys, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. They're going to be on the list anyway. But give some of these other guys opportunities that don't. But like you said, listen, yeah, I mean, no doubt it's got to start within the leagues. Like, if you're not doing it within the leagues, how are you expecting people from outside the leagues to look at some of these assistants? Like, it's got to be they got to be rewarded, period, within the leagues.
Yeah. Now, this is something that I think a lot of people, you know, are kind of wondering, but then specifically the MEAC, because obviously we've seen, you know, Hampton, you know, left the MEAC to go to the Big South. North Carolina A&T left the MEAC also to go to the Big South. Then you have FAM left to go to the SWAC, I believe. Yeah. I think Badoon was leaving as well. But, like, when it comes to the MEAC, like, how do you think that that's going to affect the league long term? Do you think that maybe they should try to, you know, get like a Bowie State or a Fayetteville State or some of these other maybe D2 schools to come up to the MEAC? Like, because obviously the conference is getting smaller and smaller. You know, you need that revenue. But, you know, how do you think that these schools potentially trying to leave and going to these other leagues are going to affect the conference long term?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you need to replace them, but you got to replace them with – you can't just replace them to replace them. You better get, you know, schools in. I mean, some of these other leagues have done a good – like Bellarmine has come in and been great. Right? Merrimack near me has come in and been great. So you can't just get somebody just to fill the void, right? Get somebody that's good enough. And if you can't find somebody now, wait a year, wait 2 years. But make sure you get somebody that's not going to be just a doormat for the league. That's not worth doing.
I guess my question is more of a broader thing with on the me. I know for example, like for a big part is recruiting. You have to recruit players. You have to win the games. And I know Dowster made a point, obviously, on the Zoom when he was talking about, you know, how a lot of these MEAC schools are forced to go out and play 10, 12, 15 bye games in the beginning of the season. Now you're coming into the conference 1-16, and obviously it brings the numbers down and whatnot. But you have to play those games because, like, that's what funds your athletic department. You know, like there's no way around that. If you're Delaware State, you won't have enough money to not play those games. So it's like you have to win the game. But I don't know. I just feel like what the solution is there. You can't not play the game, but it's like if you're gonna,
yeah, look, and your record looks like crap. If you're a head coach, right, you go out there and you're playing 10 bye games, and you're, you know, 1-9. If you're lucky, you win one of them, and no matter how you do in the league, your overall record doesn't look good. It doesn't look nearly as good as, you know, some of the, you know, Quinnipiac, right? Like, how many bye games does Baker Dunleavy have to play?
One, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
We didn't play at Quinnipiac. I know even when Tom Moore was there, we played Oregon State my freshman year. That was the only bye game we played. My sophomore year, we had a tournament in Florida, but that wasn't a bye game. We didn't even play bye games at Quinnipiac because we didn't need to. We had the money, so we didn't have to play bye games. So
it's a major advantage. Major advantage not to get your butt kicked, number one. So you go into league feeling pretty good about yourself because – you know, you're maybe 5-5 instead of 0-10. Yeah. And again, part of it is, you know, for the and I guess that'd be my question to you guys. Like, how different are the program like Quinnipiac and Coppin State? How different are the resources? Quinnipiac's different because they can pay. I mean, they got money. They can really, really pay. They paid Tom Moore. They paid Baker. We know that. But like the ordinary and there's a wide variety, I think, within the HBCUs.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, some don't have any resources or minimal, and some are way better than we would think.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. I mean, what I'll say is, like, talent-wise, like, my team my last year at Coppin State was the same. Like, we had – obviously, me and Drew came from Quinnipiac. We had a guy, Kamal McKnight, who came from Tennessee State, averaged, like, 12 a game in the OVC. We had Kobe Thomas, who was the rookie of the year in the NEC his first year. We had a guy named Brendan Melly-Bacon, 7-footer. Left and went to BCU. He's at McNeese now. I mean, we had talent. DeJuan Clayton obviously was a 3-time all-conference in the MEAC, and he's going to Hartford now. But and then at Quinnipiac, the talent is the same, but the resources, I would say, is just like you, like, man, like at Quinnipiac, for example, you're getting cost of attendance every semester, and then we're getting meal checks, which is like $2,000 per semester, and on top of that, we're getting the Pell Grant, you know, so you're getting – we're not getting none of that. I mean, I'm talking about that in the MEAC. We didn't get our check we had a check for like rent, which was like $5,000, which was to cover our rent. But we didn't even get that until like November. So from September and November, we're out there with no money. Like, so it's like, you don't.
So what did you make total at Quinnipiac between cost of attendance, Pell Grant, everything? Give me the difference. Like, what do you think you made overall for the year? For the year, whole year.
I paid my car off in cash. I bought my junior year a 2014 Ford Fusion in cash with the money that I saved up from my freshman and sophomore year. And I was saving. So we were getting $6,000 per semester from, because we were getting the Pell Grant, and then we were getting $1,000 cost of attendance, and then we were getting $2,000 for like the meal check. So that's $6,000 per semester. So you're getting $12,000 per year. And then if you're in the summer, you're getting $1,000 for summer one, $1,000 for summer two. So you're getting like $14,000 at Quinnipiac. This is what we were getting. So
it's not the ACC.
This is not the ACC. This isn't the Big Ten, isn't it?
That's crazy.
We're getting $14,000 a year at Quinnipiac. So I was saving. I ain't gonna lie and save all of it. I saved $5,000-$6,000 per year. And by my junior year, I had $18,000 in the bank in cash. So I bought my car for like $11,000. I paid it off in cash. I have my own car. It's paid off. To this day, I don't pay anything on it. Like, and at Cobham, we're begging our coaches for meals at times. Like, we're not even eating. We're trying to.
You got nothing.
Nothing.
So, Coppin, you got legitimately – did you get Pell Grant?
No. Well, we were grad students. The undergrads got Pell. The people that were undergrads got Pell. But we didn't get it. We were grad students. So, we were down bad out there. But it's tough, man. It's tough.
That's what I'm saying. So, there is – and I think that's part of the issue too, right? Like, if you're a kid and you're looking at going to Quinnipiac or Coppin State and you're saying to yourself, well, cost of attendance is significant.
Yeah.
To some people.
Yeah.
Like, people don't understand that. That's a good amount of money.
This last week, I talked to a recruit. He was in the portal, and he has a kid. And he was like, yo, like, I have a kid to support, so I have to go somewhere that where we get money. Like, it doesn't matter if the school – I won't know any details, but this kid literally, like, was like, yo, I'm not going to school if we don't get money. Like, whether
I don't blame him.
Like, and that's a real issue for kids out here nowadays. So –
yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, man, because like, you know, we have this time right now where everybody's trying, you know, everybody wants to go for the big shiny things, you know, everybody wants to go for the McCurr Makers and the Mikey Williams, you know, but it's like, what is Mikey Williams going to do if he shows up to an HBCU campus? Like, I'm not saying every school like this. What is he going to do if he goes up there and he has to wait for his check for a month, you know, to pay his rent? Like, now, granted, Mike Williams is probably going to have, you know, other money coming in from, you know, name and image likeness. He might be fine. But, like, what's it going to be like? Are these kids that's used to playing, you know, on the EYBL Nike circuit, you know, going to be willing to come to HBCU and have to hop on that bus, you know, when
something's got to be done. Something's got to be done to change that. So the resources are better across the board. It has to be changed where to me, again, you know, cost of attendance. And again, I know it's hard because some of these schools don't want to pay it because it adds up. But ultimately, if you want to be a program that, again, has a good athletic program, right, and you're selling that, well, then you've got to keep up with the Joneses, whether you're in an HBCU, whether you're in America East, whatever league, you got to do that. Otherwise, frankly, kids are going to choose – a lot of kids are going to choose, you know, a place that pays a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. I think that's like the nitty gritty because we all want to see HBCUs get to that level, you know, where they can get the you know, the best of the best and compete at the highest level. And I think it's like a, you know, it's kind of a catch-22. We need the media, we need the exposure. Like, we need people to understand what's going on because there's great basketball being played in these conferences. But we also need these schools and the administration to get behind it and put the resources in place to be able to sustain it. You know what I'm saying? For years to come, not just for a one-time thing where you get a kid and then he never comes
back. We're not saying that HBCU should be at the same level as Power 5 or 6 schools. Nobody's saying that. What we're saying is they should be on the same level as some of these other leagues, right? That's the difference. They shouldn't be off to themselves, thought of as a minor leagues in college basketball, period. Like, we know there's a difference between the you know, tiers, right? Like the Power Five or Six are unto their own, and then Mountain West, WCC, A10, whatever, you can put them underneath. After that, that's my biggest problem. My biggest problem is why is the NEC thought of up here when HBCUs are down here? You guys know. Listen, nobody's better equipped to answer this question. What is the talent difference between the NEC and the HBCUs? What's the talent difference, guys?
None.
No difference.
No difference.
There you go. There you go. From two people who have lived it.
Right. Like, I would argue the MEAC is better because the MEAC is a very physical league. You got a guy like, you know, you got guys coming down from everywhere. And Central has CJ Kaiser dropping down from Wichita State. Norfolk had Jermaine Bishop from St. Louis drop down. I mean, like, I don't know. There's no difference in talent, though. None at all.
And that needs to be out there. That's the biggest difference. Again, we're not saying it's Big Ten. It's not the same as ACC. We get that. But when it comes to so many other leagues around the country, why doesn't it get the same respect?
Well, listen, man, it's guys like me and Drew's job and guys like Jeff and Roberts, and it's all of our jobs to get that information out there and to make sure that point is driven home, man. So I don't think – I'm pretty sure we'd be covered it all, man. We're running a little bit low on time, so I just want to thank you for coming on, and we definitely, you know, had a great conversation. We appreciate the insight that you were able to share, man, and definitely goes a long way.
Thanks for having me, guys. Listen, we got to do it again. We'll do it again before the season starts, and we'll talk actual players and hoop, and maybe we'll bring on some HBCU coaches, and we can break down the league.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
All right, let's do it.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Jeff. And, you know, this has been another episode of the Auto Bid, guys. So thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to let our guy pull up Tay, take us out with some music. And until next time, folks.
Take your best shot. I'm going to take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. You beating on me.
I can tell.
It's time to get a check, boy.
Check, boy.
You on the sideline. You ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You beating on me.
I can tell.
What's the topic of discussion?
What we talking about?
Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.